This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. You can vote and serve in the military when you turn 18. You can get married or get a tattoo without parents' consent. You can have a full Vermont driver's license. But you can't legally drink alcohol here until you're 21. In many places, you can't rent a car until you hit 25. A bill that passed the Vermont House last week would raise the smoking age in Vermont from 18 to 21. It would be phased in over a couple of years, and active military personnel would be exempt. This bill is eliciting some strong feelings on both sides of the divide. We've been hearing all day from listeners, and we're joined now by two state representatives with differing views. Northfield Representative Ann Donahue opposes the bill, and Jericho Representative George Till is perhaps the strongest and most vocal supporter of the idea. Thanks to both of you for being with us today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jane.
Dr. Till, what's your thinking behind raising the smoking rate to 21? Give me your dust jacket summary here, and then we can get into details as this conversation evolves.
Well, my summary would be this. We have a huge public health problem with smoking. We all know that smoking is the most preventable cause of premature death in the country. I think a lot of people don't realize how big a problem it is. We're talking 480,000 people a year in this country and about 1,000 people in Vermont who die each year prematurely from smoking-related illnesses. We also know that this is an extremely addictive habit that most people regret that they ever started. And we know that smoking cessation is much harder than preventing people from starting in the first place. The idea of raising the smoking age is to prevent youth and especially younger teens from getting the tobacco products. We know that the tobacco products are supplied to 15, 16, 17-year-olds from those by those people who are 18 to 20 years old. They provide 90% of it to the even younger. And we also know your brain is not developed at that point and that the nicotine required to get you addicted at a young age is much lower than the nicotine to get you addicted at a higher age. And so we know that once you're addicted, youth who smokes will be three out of four will continue to be smokers into the adult age. So we need to prevent them from starting.
So
that's what this bill aims to do.
Representative Donahue, your take then. We know all of those things that George Till just said about the risks of smoking, the health risks, and the addictiveness. You know, it's pretty much, I mean, I don't think anybody disputes now that smoking is bad for people's health. And as a state, we have made strides in targeting smoking prevention efforts in youth in particular. So why not raise the smoking age?
Well, I want to say I absolutely agree. And we absolutely want to do every reasonable thing possible to try to discourage anyone from starting smoking, and particularly kids. No question. But there are questions about how far one goes in terms of civil rights and age discrimination. We as a society make decisions about when you are considered capable of making adult decisions. And I think it's important to recognize that the right to make a decision includes the right to make bad decisions. It's a bad decision to start smoking. But if you say, well, you only have the right to make good decisions, it's not a right at all. Who decides what's a good decision? You know, so the right to make bad decisions about your own welfare is fundamental to the right of making adult decisions. And if we have identified 18 as the age of maturity, then to say, except you can't make this decision, I think we're raising very serious issues about protecting rights of decision making.
And in fact, Representative Donahue, you would be in support of lowering the drinking age to 18 as well? Because right now we do tell people in that age range you can't drink alcohol legally.
I would. I think that's equally irrational. And I think it's important to note that we're really held hostage or blackmailed by the federal government on that. There have been bills introduced in the Vermont legislature to move that age bills that people knew wouldn't go anywhere because we couldn't afford to lose all those federal transportation dollars.
Listeners, what do you think about the idea of making it illegal for Vermonters to smoke cigarettes or buy other kinds of nicotine products until they hit the age of 21? It is a concept being debated in Montpelier right now, and we're taking stock of the arguments and hearing as well from many passionate listeners on this topic. If you are one of them, or maybe you just have a question about how it would work, you can call 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211, or post a note on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. Paul in Hinesburg says, I'm no fan of cigarettes, but the attempts to raise the legal age and the proposed carve-outs for active military is filled with contradictions. How about exempting EMTs and firefighters since we trust them with our lives, or LNAs and other healthcare workers? Pity the sales clerk who would have to be the frontline enforcement of this convoluted law. Scrap the proposal and keep it simple. Continue to raise the tax on cigarettes and create a disincentive for buyers of all ages. Rachel in East Hardwick says, sounds like straightforward age discrimination and should be rejected out of hand as unconstitutional. Making tobacco illegal to the under 21 crowd could easily serve to increase the cachet of smoking among young people. And the idea to exempt military personnel from the restriction as a specious thank you for your service is repellent. People are either legally responsible at age 18 or they are not. If there are health concerns, they should be addressed through public programs and positive messaging rather than causing more people to lurk in doorways. But Virginia in Barrytown has a different perspective. She says, speaking as a longtime smoker, I'm troubled by the argument that if a young person at 18 is old enough to go to war, they're old enough to smoke tobacco. No one should be smoking tobacco for far too many obvious reasons. There is no good reason to smoke tobacco. If I had my way, the smoking age would be raised to 50. Again, you can tell us what you think, 1-800-639-2211, or post your thoughts on our Facebook page. Representative Till, you mentioned that you're especially concerned about the rates of young people even below 18 smoking, and that many of them are able to get cigarettes or nicotine products from people in that 18 to 21-year-old range, that sort of next most proximate age range. But when you look at the statistics in Vermont, teen rates have been on the decline. In 1999, 33% of Vermont high schoolers smoked. In just the latest youth risk behavior survey that came out a couple months ago, that number was down to 11% of high schoolers. And not only that, but it seems like young people in general are on the low end of categories of people who smoke in Vermont. And 18 to 24-year-olds, it's about 17% are smokers. So why target this particular age range when it seems like educational and prevention efforts are having quite a bit of success?
Well, Jane, there's an issue of brain development here. And the younger you are, the less nicotine it takes you to get addicted. And so the younger people require fewer cigarettes and have a harder time stopping. 18 to 20-year-olds are often in the same social circles with other kids they went to high school with who are younger. In terms of the dropping, well, let's be clear. It had dropped quickly for a long time, but it's all kind of leveled out. And in addition to the tobacco products now, we've got about 6,000 middle and high schoolers in Vermont who are using e-cigarettes, another nicotine addiction. So the reason to target this age group is that we know it works. In Needham, Massachusetts, 2005-2006, just a suburb of Boston, they raised their smoking age to 21. Nobody around them did it. Needham did nothing different in terms of availability of tobacco products, no change in the tax compared to the other suburbs. And what they found was almost like a 48% reduction in ever smoking and a 62% reduction in frequent smoking among teenagers. So we know that it works. And since that time, about 100 towns in Massachusetts have followed Needham's lead. Across the country, multiple towns have. We're up to about 25 additional towns, everywhere from New York to San Francisco, Kansas City, Cleveland, have imposed this. And two states have done it. The state of Hawaii passed it last summer, and it went into effect just with January 1st of this year. And the very week that we voted on this in the House, California passed it. People are passing this law because they know it works. You know, and again, there's humongous public support for this, even among smokers and among 18 to 24-year-olds.
How do you gauge that? How do you know that there's tremendous public support?
The CDC did a study that they released in 2015, and they asked general population whether they supported this or not, and that number was 75% supported raising the smoking age. They asked smokers, and that number was 70% supported raising the smoking age. And they asked specifically 18 to 24-year-olds, and that was 65%. And I think the reason you see that big number is do you know any smokers who don't want to quit? I mean, this is not this is an addiction. This is a burden to people. The tobacco companies spend $24 million a day advertising, and their advertising is aimed at young people particularly. They have made these products extremely addictive. And once people start, they really wish they hadn't. They really want to stop. 50% of smokers try every year to stop.
So why not just make it illegal altogether? Or, you know, as a medical doctor, you know this better than I do, but doesn't the brain develop until age 25? So why not either make it 25 or just say, forget it. This is too expensive and it's a bad choice. No nicotine products.
Well, I mean, as we're having the marijuana debate, and we know that prohibition is a tough road to go down. In terms of the 25 versus 21, the Institute of Medicine of the National Academy of Sciences looked at that in a study that they released in 2015. And what they found was, in essence, the bang for your buck, the amount of difference it made was quite small to go to beyond 21 to 25. It did reduce rates a little bit, but nowhere near as much as raising it from 18 to 21 reduced smoking rates. And I think the reason for that is what we mentioned earlier, and that's that, you know, 18 to 20-year-olds provide the younger kids – 18 to 20-year-olds by themselves are more susceptible, and then they provide 90% of the cigarettes to the even younger kids.
Let's get some callers in here. Kent is on the line with us from South Hero. Hi, Kent. Go right ahead.
Hi. Thanks, Jane. I just want to say that I support the legislation, and that if anything, I don't think it goes far enough. And the argument that it is somehow a violation of people's rights to not be able to make poor decisions is just a red herring. I think that, you know, smoking and the health effects have a social cost, and all of us who are not smokers end up paying the social cost in terms of health care costs for people that make these bad decisions, whether it's to get addicted to smoking or whether it's abusing alcohol and drugs. So if anything, I don't think this legislation goes far enough, and I would like to see accountability from a health care cost standpoint for people's behavior.
Kent, thanks for your call. Appreciate that. I mean, we do see insurance companies asking about smoking, life insurance companies asking about smoking. So there is some accountability. But Representative Donahue, respond to Kent's idea here that, you know, the government does make choices about what people can and cannot do based on a whole host of things, including, you know, social issues. So why not?
Well, absolutely. I mean, I agree in concept with a lot of what he had to say. And that would go to the issue of should we be considering banning nicotine as something that has this incredible health cost, or imposing a greater degree of responsibility for that decision in terms of your own health care costs, as you referenced, Jane, as some insurance companies are doing. We make other bad health decisions, whether it's massive intake of sugar or clogging our arteries that impose costs on everyone else. So it's not about a right to make a decision to smoke. It's about our right to make all kinds of decisions, good or bad. And do we need to be accountable for them? Absolutely. I strongly support that we should be accountable for them. And I also think that Dr. Till made an excellent point about trying to address access for younger kids who can't legally buy cigarettes. But I would say the same thing. This is about accountability of those people who are providing them. So do we need to perhaps enhance penalties for anyone of any age? But perhaps it would affect 18 to 21-year-olds more if they're the ones providing more cigarettes. Do we need to enhance penalties for illegally providing this very addictive, dangerous drug to kids under age 18? Those are the kind of approaches that make sense. But to arbitrarily discriminate against 18 to 21-year-olds when we recognize and put tremendous measures of accountability on their behavior for other things. And I think one of the areas where there was a great deal of research on the issue of brain development and the fact that you don't turn a switch at a given age and suddenly become an adult. I read in depth, because it was a legal issue that was of interest to me, the various briefs in the U.S. Supreme Court on the issue of the death penalty. The U.S. Supreme Court found that brain development information very valid and very compelling, and as a result ruled that the death penalty as applied to those under the age of 18 was unconstitutional. But it's constitutional at age 18. The level of accountability we place for decision-making, for young people whose ability to make good judgments is not fully developed, we place that level of accountability on them. So I think it really creates a double standard and age discrimination to say we're going to hold you accountability to the ultimate degree for decisions you make, but we're not going to let you make some decisions that everyone recognizes may be bad decisions.
We're talking about whether or not Vermont should raise the smoking age from 18 to 21. Tell us what you think about the idea. Call 1-800-639-2211. Carolyn's calling in from Ferrisburg. Hi, Carolyn. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm 36 and a former smoker. I smoked from when I was 16 years old to 27. And the comment made earlier about older teenagers purchasing for younger ones is definitely true. In my day, actually, there were shops where it was known you could get away with buying them. But I imagine now things are even tighter than ever before. So I don't think that 16-year-olds thereabouts would have the real best decision-making in this, because I was definitely influenced by my peers and drawn to it. And I think this is a great thing to look at.
Carolyn, thanks for your comments. Thayer is calling in from Montpelier. Hi, Thayer. Your thoughts?
Hi. I can't help but comment and say that I read the other day that the FDA approves OxyContin for prescriptions for kids 11 and up. Being in Vermont and knowing we have such a bad opiate problem and heroin problem, it's kind of crazy to me that no politicians in our state are saying anything about this or saying that it's okay. No one's saying anything, and yet, so it's okay for kids 11 and up to use basically a heroin in a pill, but it's not okay for kids to smoke cigarettes until they're 21. I just think there are more important, pressing issues to deal with.
Thayer, thanks for your comments. Appreciate that. We're hearing from a lot of listeners today as we discuss whether or not Vermont should raise the smoking age from 18 to 21. Post your comments on the Vermont Edition Facebook page or call 1-800-639-2211. Coming up, we're also going to get into why there is an exemption in the bill as it stands now for active military personnel. You're listening to Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Ann Donahue is a state representative from Northfield. George Till is a state representative from Jericho. They're on opposite sides of the question of raising Vermont's smoking age. Representative Till is leading the push to raise the age from 18 to 21. And we'd love to know, listeners, where you come down on this issue. After hearing their initial thoughts, after thinking a little bit about it, let us know. You can post a note on the Vermont Edition Facebook page or call 1-800-639-2211. 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Wade in Woodstock says it's still beyond comprehension that a product that kills 6 million people worldwide and 480,000 in the U.S. annually is legal, period, at any age. KF says, the thing about life in modern times is that if you make a bad decision, it more often than not affects others. In this case, we are all in an insurance pool together, and we all have to pay for the health consequences of smoking. If the smoker does not use insurance and will pay all of his or her bills when he or she gets lung cancer or emphysema, then whatever, I'm fine with it. And Richard in East Dorset says, raising the smoking age to 21 is repressive and serves only to create tantalizing forbidden fruit. The legislators recently added, if you're active in the military, you've earned the right to smoke. This is discriminatory and convoluted. These young adults already have that right, and the non-military are having their rights taken away. At 18 years old, our children can marry, vote, and die for our country. Let's treat our young adults like the adults they are, not children. Can one of you address why there is an exemption in the bill currently for military personnel and why you think that passed the House?
Sure. I'll jump into it. I'm sure Dr. Till will have thoughts as well. To me, it really epitomizes the entire argument against raising the age at all. But I think it crystallized for some people young adults who are in a position where we are telling them we expect you to act as an adult. We are treating you as an adult. We are putting responsibilities upon you as an adult. Therefore, for you in particular, we should not be taking away the right to make adult decisions. And so for some people, there was a divide there because those are young people who have been clearly identified as expecting to behave as adults. I don't find it – obviously, as someone who believed that the age shouldn't be increased at all, I was going to support at least this partial group. I don't think that it has logical consistency because I think we expect adult behavior and impose costs on failure to make adult decisions on all of our 18-year-olds, not just those who – enter the military. And of course, we still have the availability to impose a draft in this country, and then everyone would be subject to it. So I don't think there's a logical consistency, but I do understand why people felt they should support that because it kind of epitomized the adult decision-making issue.
Dr. Till, do you think it has a logical inconsistency as well?
I do think there's some inconsistency, but I also want to point out this is about population health and public health. And I think you need to realize how few people we're actually talking about here. So there are about 6,000 18-year-olds in Vermont, and less than 5% sign up for the military. We know among the military about a quarter smoke. So now we're down to 75 people a year is what we're talking about here. From the public health perspective, 75 is a problem, but it's just a tiny tip of the iceberg, and we really don't want to wag the whole dog by that tail. I think there's a level of inconsistency there, and I understand that this is about the balance between personal interests of young adults and the very legitimate concerns about protecting public health. And, I think that the big picture clearly argues for increasing the smoking age. If some people feel, enough people feel that those in the military or who have been in the military are should be exempt, to me that doesn't change the whole overall picture because we're still talking about a very small number of individuals.
Couldn't you extend that argument, though, when, again, going back to the statistics on youth smoking versus the smoking in other categories of people and knowing that we're talking certainly about more than 75 people a year, but looking at numbers and you look at people living in poverty, the rate of people who smoke who live, in poverty based on federal guidelines is over 30%, according to the Department of Health statistics. People who deal with mental illness, 39% of them are smokers. You know, you look at other issues, 20% of pregnant women are smoking, 31% of people who identify as gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, or queer. So we're looking at 17% of young people. But in these other categories, we see much higher rates, much higher prevalence of people who are smoking. Why not, you know, why this prohibition instead of targeting specifically these other groups that have a much higher rate and are in the thousands?
Well, I think that we're talking here about 1,000 people a year in Vermont dying prematurely from, you know, from tobacco-related illnesses. And targeting individual groups, I think is a much more difficult road to get down. And, targeting by age, we do that constantly. We do that with your, you know, driver's license. It's not until you're 16. We do that, you know, with alcohol, as you mentioned earlier. The marijuana bill in front of the House right now uses an age of 21. You mentioned you can't rent a car. At 18, if you're under 18, you're in the juvenile justice system, except if you've committed a violent crime where you can, all the way down to 14, you could be prosecuted as an adult. So there's nothing magical about the 18 number. We know that vulnerable people are the most susceptible to the advertising by these companies. We know that that's where the ads are targeted. Not only all youth, but, you know, people with lower levels of educational attainment, the other groups you mentioned. I mean, one of them, it, to me, is particularly appalling, being an obstetrician. Vermont is one of two states in the whole country where the overall smoking for adults is lower than the smoking rate in pregnancy.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, that's just appalling.
Something like 20%, about 1,100 pregnant women in Vermont at any given time are smokers.
Yeah, the most recent number I saw was 16.8%. But yeah, in that almost 20% kind of range. I mean, it's a problem. And that's where, I mean, I think some folks don't really see, understand how much this is costing them personally. And I'm not talking about just the smokers. This is everybody. So we spend just on direct medical costs related to tobacco-related illness, $348 million a year here in Vermont. That's a lot of money. On the Medicaid budget, it's $87 million spent on tobacco-related illnesses. You see this other places, though. You see this in your premiums for your health care. You see this in your property taxes. You know, we passed Act 46 last year about school consolidation. We had to go back and revise the numbers this year purely because the teachers' health care costs went up so much. I mean, that's the kind of thing where we see right now. Every year we come back to the State House and we have a huge budget gap, and it's usually related to our Medicaid budget, and it's related to – this is the low-hanging fruit of the healthcare expenditures. We know from the data that came from Needham, Massachusetts, and from the Academy, National Academy of Sciences, the Institute of Medicine. We know that this works, and we know that we can reduce the public health expenditures here. And I just, with this regard to the age to 21, I'd say one more thing, and that's that. There is no other issue that we talked about relating to age that has the same level of public health implications that this has. I mean, if we had 1,000 people a year dying from automobile accidents in Vermont, we would be going crazy and changing rules around driving. 1,000 people a year in Vermont dying from this.
Let's get another couple callers in here. We got a note from PRH who says, I say let's raise the smoking age to 60 or 70. After that, smoke as much as you want. We can go as well to Arthur calling in from Burlington. Hi, Arthur. Go right ahead.
Hi, how are you?
Great.
You know, I listened to the doctor, and the poor man is out of control because he's so frustrated. We're eating ourselves to death, smoking ourselves to death. He cites Needham. By the way, I am for what he wants, 18 to 21. He has stats to back up. It works, anything that works, you try. You can't, with all a million moving parts in front of you, you can't try to hold one part constant. Doesn't ever work in anything in life. But Needham, Massachusetts, for example, is one of the most wealthy towns in Massachusetts, where the parents are backing up the no smoking with their teenagers. If you went around Vermont and took the poor communities where the people have low income and everything, and see how many of those children cut their smoking back as teenagers versus someone like South Burlington or some of the Montpelier school area, I don't think it would be even at all. Now, the doctor knows we're eating ourselves to death. And, you know, you go over the DMV, which I did yesterday, and you see all these poor people in Vermont. And you see people that send a dealer over to get their new license or to register the car. And you look around and you realize the human family, you know, unless you're lucky enough to have parents and enough to eat and an education, is in dire condition. I mean,
you know. Arthur, I take your point, and you're addressing again these issues of socioeconomic disparity, which play so greatly into rates of smoking. I appreciate your thoughts. I want to get another call in here from Bob in Burlington. Bob, you're on.
Hi, I totally agree with Ann that regulating the age is not the way to go here. The ultimate hypocrite in this whole process, of course, is the state legislature, who every couple of years runs into financial difficulty and jacks up the tobacco taxes. Well, it seems that works as far as cutting down smoking, because if you look at the youth risk assessments over the last decade, every time the legislature raises the tobacco tax, youth smoking seems to go down a little bit. Alcohol is just as serious a problem in this state, and you know, here's the hypocrisy. You will never see the legislature tax $6 or $7 per bottle of beer a tax, because A, the Grocers Association would scream bloody murder, and B, all the members of the legislature would have to pay that tax when they drink. I don't think there's any of them that smoke.
So, Bob, I hear you saying there's a hypocrisy here in our disparity between how we treat alcohol and how we treat cigarettes. Lots of opinions coming in on this idea of raising the age of smoking to 21. Representative Donahue, before we close out this conversation, I'm curious what you think, which direction you think it's going to go in the Senate. Is this something that has legs to pass this year?
I think that it may, among other things, be too short on time. I think we're closing the end of the session. I don't know that the Senate it's beyond the time that by rules a bill can cross over to the Senate. I guess you'd have to ask the Rules Committee in the Senate.
And if it does come up again, then will you be a vocal opponent again? You know, would you come up with some other plan, maybe ban nicotine or tobacco altogether?
Well, unfortunately, I mean, I think there's a lot of consistency and a lot of good sense to that. It doesn't mean that it's viable. I think we need to be aggressive about things like accountability. Even in her, I would love to see something addressing health insurance rates based on smoking cessation plans or failure to be involved in cessation plans. Things like that make a lot of sense. It's not a question of it being a problem. It's a question about the appropriate way to address it.
Ann Donahue is a state representative from Northfield. George Till is a state representative from Jericho. Thank you very much, both of you, for being on the program today.
Thank you, Jane.
Thanks a lot.
Coming up, are Vermont guns crossing the border and being used in crimes in New York? We'll get a handle on how much of an issue this really is. It's come up in the presidential campaign. That's next on Vermont Edition. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. The question of guns coming from Vermont and being used in crimes in New York has become a campaign issue raised by Democratic candidate for president Hillary Clinton. Just this week, in a panel on gun violence, Clinton said this: "The state that has the highest per capita number of those guns that end up committing crimes in New York come from Vermont." Well, there's been a lot of discussion in Vermont about this issue, and we thought it might be helpful to clarify the facts. We're joined now by John Roman, senior fellow in the Justice Policy Center at the Urban Institute think tank. John Roman, thanks very much for being here.
I'm delighted to be here. Thank you.
So again, Hillary Clinton said that per capita, Vermont has the highest rate of guns being used in crimes in New York that are coming in from out of state. technically, that's true insofar as guns are tracked in New York, correct?
So she is correct in her assessment, but she is asking and answering the wrong question.
Because why?
Well, I mean, the question is, so if you look at New York, the point that's being made here is that, you know, New York has extremely strict gun control laws, and probably 2/3 to 3/4 of guns used in violent acts in the state of New York and in the city come from somewhere else in America. They could come from as far away as California, which actually produces more guns used in violent acts in New York than Vermont does. So New Yorkers are very concerned about guns traveling into their state, and they want to find ways to interdict those guns and keep gun trafficking as low as possible. But this statistic doesn't really get at the underlying issue in any meaningful way.
Let's talk about the raw numbers. Mm-hmm. How many guns are known to have come from Vermont in the last couple of years that were then used in gun crimes in New York?
So I think there were 61 in 2013 and 55 in 2014. But these are just the ones that are traced.
Right.
We don't really do a good job about tracing guns that are involved in criminal acts. There are lots of criminal acts where we know who did it. We know what weapon was used. You know, it's domestic violence or parents, I hate to say this, hurting kids or other situations. What we care about are where do guns come from when they're used in gang violence, where they're used in terror, where they're used in organized crime. And those are the guns we trace. And that's really actually just a small percentage of all guns.
That's right. And so from what is known, this, you know, 61 guns or so in 2013 and something like 55 in 2014, that's what number compared to the total that are known?
Well, we traced about 4,000 guns, so it's a tiny fraction of the total population of guns that New York turned over to the ATF to trace.
So, you know, again, going back to the facts here, when we talk about per capita, which is the language that candidate Hillary Clinton was using, that's correct because it's something like 8% per 100,000. But Vermont, again, is a very small population, so per capita statistics can be misleading. Why does it matter whether we calculate by raw numbers or per capita?
So when we talk about violence in America, we almost always talk about it in terms of per capita. We want to know what the likelihood of being the victim of a violent act is, given the density of the population, right? So we can compare what happens in Rochester and Poughkeepsie to what happens in New York City and Burlington, right? And make a fair assessment about where we need to deploy resources to solve those problems. In this situation, it actually makes absolutely no sense whatsoever to me anyway, which is to say when you're talking about a really small number of guns, what you're talking about is where do those guns come from? And they tend to come from a couple of dealers at a gun show, a couple of licensed dealers who are willing to peddle guns to dangerous people under the table. And what you care about is, you know, where are those guns coming from and how many of those places are there that law enforcement needs to investigate. In Vermont, you could be talking about, you know, one unlicensed gun dealer providing most of those weapons. So the number of people who live in Vermont is completely irrelevant to the question.
So do you think that candidate Clinton is being intentionally misleading then in suggesting that Vermont is a problem for New York when it comes to gun crime?
Well, I mean, I think what's going on here is pretty clear, right? I mean, you know, we're talking about the former senator from New York, you know, talking to the senator from Vermont about Vermont guns going into New York. So I think that's pretty obvious. New Yorkers care enormously about guns. This is a huge issue to them. New York City actually is one of the safest, if not the safest, big city in America. And in part, it is because it has extremely strong gun laws. Vermont has sort of notoriously lax gun laws. And, you know, there was a way to frame this comparison without going to this particular statistic, which I believe to be misleading.
And where do you come from on this position? You know, how can you sort of tell listeners your framework of mind on this?
Well, I mean, I think it's pretty straightforward. I mean, if you're in a house with a gun, you're about three times as likely to have somebody in that household experience a suicide. If you're a woman in a household with a gun, you're about four times as likely to be the victim of a domestic violence homicide. There are about 14,000 homicides a year in America, and more than 11,000 of them are committed with a handgun. So it's clear that firearms in America are contributing to the deaths of Americans that could have been avoidable, and that's sort of where I come from.
So what is the priority then in terms of stemming the tide of illegal guns coming into New York and specifically New York City? You know, where should the focus be?
Well, I mean, the focus has been, and Governor Cuomo has been really aggressive on this issue, is trying to get places like North Carolina and South Carolina and Georgia in particular, and Virginia to some extent, and Pennsylvania to some extent, to crack down on the dealers who are selling guns, firearms, to people who shouldn't have access to those weapons because they're excluded under federal law, because they have a prior felony conviction, they have had some mental illness that's been documented, or for other reasons, domestic violence restraining orders, for other reasons, shouldn't own a firearm. And those weapons are making their way into New York. And New York's focus has been outward, which I think Secretary Clinton is reflecting, which is to say, look, the problem isn't within New York. It's things coming into New York, and we need to stop that.
John Roman is a senior fellow in the Justice Policy Center at the Urban Institute think tank. Thanks very much for speaking with us about the numbers of guns coming from Vermont being used in New York gun crimes and other ways that guns are coming into the state. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Finally, today we hear from the latest band featured on VPR's Live from the Fort series. Paper Castles has been around since 2008. The current lineup is Patty Regan on bass and vocals, Ren Kitts on guitar, Jake Brennan on guitar and vocals, and Brennan Mangan on drums and vocals. The band describes its music as rock and roll with psychedelic leanings. Here's Paper Castles with Monster of the Week in the VPR Performance Studio.
Another started, and everybody paid the coin to see how the girl became the angel, the boy became the monster of the week.
You're listening to Paper Castles perform Monster of the Week. It's part of VPR's Live from the Fort series. You can find all of the performances at vpr.net. Tomorrow, what happened to the marijuana legalization bill? It went from legalizing small amounts of marijuana but not allowing home growing to a bill that now does not legalize consumption but would decriminalize small-scale home growing. We'll take a look at what happened and where that legislation stands now. And you can send your questions and comments to us at vermontedition@vpr.net. Be sure to tune in tomorrow at noon. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening.